Hello and welcome to Juno Afternoon. It's Monday, August 19th. I'm Joan Pardis. Jeff Brown is the engineer and producer of this show, and we have a really good show today for Monday. We'll be chatting with Kim Kiefer about CBJ activities, City and Borough of Juno. We'll also be talking with Adam Harkness by phone about the Better Business Bureau in Alaska. Summer Krista will be here in the studio to highlight the Kinder Espanol class at the Juno Family Birth Center, and we'll talk with Alaska's fiddling poet, Ken Waldman. That, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music, and more all today. As far as the weather, mostly cloudy, showers tonight, numerous showers on Tuesday, and looks like showers for the rest of the week. Stay tuned. We'll be back in just a few moments.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The South Dakota Indian Business Alliance has concluded its first year of operating the Native Entrepreneur Investment Fund. As Jim Kent reports, the fund distributed 11 loans totaling $100,000.
The South Dakota Indian Business Alliance was formed in 2007 to develop effective and efficient business environments for Native Americans. Spokesperson James Cordry says the alliance created the Native Entrepreneur Investment Fund to expand access to fair lending services to the 9 South Dakota reservations and beyond.
Not all tribal members live on the reservation. We're all over South Dakota.
Nearly 30% of entrepreneurs served through the fund are located in or near urban areas, such as Rapid City, where half the Native American population lives below the poverty level. Cordry says the initial goal of the Native Entrepreneur Investment Fund was to help 40 Native American entrepreneurs, but the alliance actually helped 50.
Many people want to be entrepreneurs. It's the American dream. You want to have your own business. And I know from talking all around the state that many Native tribal members want to be entrepreneurs. They want to be independent. You know, they want to make their lives better for their families. So I think it's essential for a program like this to move forward and become just a part of regular lending.
Among the Rapid City businesses helped by the Native Entrepreneur Investment Fund are Alyssa Crawford Photography and Maui Wowie Coffee and Smoothies. For National Native News, I'm Jim Kent.
Teachers headed to Northwest Alaska this summer to spend some time at a traditional fish camp. The camp is one of two in the state that are part of an effort to improve cultural understanding among incoming teachers and to help with teacher retention. KSKA's Daisha Eaton reports.
There's no electricity or running water, and the only form of communication and sometimes entertainment is a VHF radio in the cookhouse. There's also a fish drying rack and a half dozen wooden platforms topped with tents. It's about 30 miles north of the Arctic Circle and thousands of miles from the cities and suburbs of the lower 48, where most of the dozen or so early career teachers studied. Alaska has long counted on a steady stream of eager graduates to fill the state's most remote teaching positions. But the teacher turnover rate in some villages is as high as 30% to 50%. The Alaska Humanities Forum, along with tribal groups and school districts, is trying to improve that rate through the 10-day cultural immersion program. Victoria Morris teaches them the values of local residents.
Our traditions, our values, our subsistence lifestyle. I'm also introducing them to what life is like living in the village in a rural, isolated area.
Nina Kempel is the CEO of the Alaska Humanities Forum, which funds the program.
The rationale behind this program is that if we can keep teachers in the schools longer, especially new teachers new to Alaska in schools longer, we actually increase student achievement.
Tracy Bell was in the first group of teachers who went through the training last summer. The course helped her make the transition from living in Lansing, Michigan, she says, to life in the village of Selawik.
There's so many people that come in and I think they expect it to be different, to be a lot like the lower 48, and it's not, but just to be open to all the changes and flexible and just to realize that, you know, we're outsiders coming in.
90% of the teachers who participated in the program last year returned to teach in rural Alaska a second year. Organizers hope the program may become a model for districts across the state.
I'm sharpening
In Kiana, I'm Daisha Eaton.
During this week in 2012, U.S. Secretary of Health and Human Services Kathleen Sebelius met with tribal communities in South Dakota. She discussed health challenges and saw their programs firsthand. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation, and by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Hello, you are listening to KTOO News Juno. This is Juno Afternoon. I'm Joan Pardis. Jeff Brown's in the studio. He is the engineer and producer of this show. And it is back to school time. Schools open tomorrow, so there'll be lots of little ones on the roadways. And the Back to School Juno Retired Educators Brunch is happening tomorrow at 8:30 at Park Shore Clubhouse. Bring food to share and school supplies that are going to be donated to Auk Bay Elementary School this year. Parking is limited, so carpooling is preferred. Also, this Wednesday, August 28th at 5 p.m. at the Douglas Library, it is the 50-year celebration of I Have a Dream, the Juno celebration of I Have a Dream. And so they are asking to come on down to hear the 50th anniversary of Dr. Martin Luther King's landmark speech, I Have a Dream. So speakers from across the community will commemorate Dr. King and speak about the personal, political, and social impacts of the civil rights era. So that is at 5 o'clock. Snacks will be provided. For more information, please contact Andy Hirsch at 586-0442. So it definitely feels like fall in Juno, not only the weather but the activity. So here in the studio, I'm the city manager. Kim Kiefer is here to chat about lots of different things, but we'll start with tonight's assembly meeting. Hi, Kim. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
So what's happening at the assembly meeting tonight?
We've got a variety of different things on the agenda tonight. We have a couple of grants that we're getting receiving from the state for a variety of different projects. There's some school funding. There's some funding to actually repair the water pump over on Sandy Beach, the roof of that, that will be matched. And then we also have an ordinance that has been in the works for some time, and it was a priority from the Housing Committee, which is to defer the taxes, the property tax on property that's subdivided. So how it works is, if say you have a 10-acre parcel, and there was a state statute that was put in place that allowed city governments to do this, and it's pretty prescriptive of how we have to do it. So you have to have at least three lots that you create. So if you take that 10-acre parcel and you create four different lots, or there are five different lots, two-acre lots, you can request every year the city ask to not pay the property tax, that additional property tax that would be charged for those five lots, and defer them for up to 5 years. Or if you sell the lot, then that, if it changes ownership, then that ends it and you have to pay it right away. If you build on that lot and you get a conditional occupancy, then that also ends it. So what it allows developers to do that have big parcels is to subdivide it and push the funding. They don't have to have the funding right up front to pay for that those additional properties and the improvements to, say, get water or sewer to those properties. It allows them to push it to the end of the project instead of at the front end. So the hope is that we'll open up more properties in the community for development for housing.
Right. And when you say you push it, you're really only talking about the taxes.
Correct. Just the property tax and the difference from the property tax of what it looked like as one lot of 10 acres compared to 5 2-acre lots.
Okay. So this is on the table right now?
It is on the table right now for a public hearing.
Okay. And the public hearing is
tonight.
Okay. So that's tonight. And
tonight.
What time is that?
The assembly meeting starts at 7 o'clock in the assembly chambers.
Okay. And is this type of tax deferral, has this been done in other communities? Are you modeling it after something?
We are. The only one that we found in the state is Fairbanks has it. And so we've been modeling after their project. And I don't know how many people have taken advantage of it
Okay.
In their years, but that's where we look to them to see how they did it.
Okay. And then you mentioned school funding. So what's going on tonight as far as the school funding?
Well, there's a couple different appropriations that we received grants from Alaska Department of Commerce and Community and Economic Development. And so there was one for Juneau Douglas School District curriculum materials, Juneau Douglas School District technology, and then for Riverbend School Play Equipment. Those were all grants that we will be appropriating tonight.
Okay, great, 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 great. And what about these grants that you, or is that what you were talking about before? You said school funding and also that you received some grants. Is that one and the same?
Part of it, yep.
Okay. And then tomorrow night something else is happening too. There's a meeting about the Peterson Hill possible rezoning.
Correct. Another one of these items that came out of the Housing Committee was to look at city property, and one of the areas that's been looked at for some time is the Peterson Hill, which is the hill across from Engineers Cutoff that goes up to Auk Lake, and that area just currently was rezoned. The private area along Glacier Highway was rezoned to D10. We're looking now at rezoning the property behind that, that's city property, also in D10 or D10SF.
And what is D10?
So D10 is, D10SF is more like Star Hill or Casey Shattuck downtown. They're smaller single-family homes. D10, you can have some multiple-family homes. So you could have duplexes or small apartment buildings there.
Oh, okay, interesting. All right, and so there's a hearing tomorrow?
So there's a meeting tomorrow night at 5:30 at the Valley Library to talk about that and show the plans and what's moving forward, and then it would go through the same process of any other rezone. So it would go to the Planning Commission.
Okay, it sounds like the city's really trying to push some affordable housing.
Some property, yep.
Yeah. Okay, and then what's cooking on Thursday? There's a community block grant. Is that an informational meeting or something?
Yep, it is an informational meeting. Thank you. It's for people that are interested in applying for that block grant. And so it's a state pass-through funding that we've used for a variety of different projects. The last group that got it was AWARE. Unfortunately, their plans changed, so not that long ago we deappropriated the funding that they got for that block grant. They used it for the adult daycare program, the bridge program on Old Glacier Highway, to be able to help with development of that building. So it's been used for a variety of projects in the community, and there's very specific criteria that have to be met in an application process. So what Thursday night is to walk people through what that application process is so they know whether they should go ahead and try and apply for it.
Okay.
They'll make a recommendation. I mean, they'll go through the process, and then there will be a committee that will review it, and then the assembly makes the final recommendation for that funding.
And where is that meeting?
That meeting is in City Hall at 5 o'clock in room 224 in the conference room.
And if people are interested to learn about the criteria to see if it's worth pursuing it, is there somewhere where they could look at that criteria online or go to the city and pick up something?
What they could do is they could talk to Beth in Community Development Department. She's the one that coordinates that program.
Okay, great. And then I hear that there is a free board training this Friday at noon as well, that it's a CBJ board training, but it's also open to people who aren't currently on a board. Is that correct?
It is. It's focused for those people that are on boards to help answer questions for them and help them understand how they fit in the organization of the CBJ. It's also a really great opportunity for somebody that just is interested in getting on a board to understand what that means. To, one, see that they've got a lot of support. There's a lot of documentation in place on how to help somebody be a good board member. But it allows them to meet other people on boards and find out what's available, find out where they get the applications, and be able to ask questions about being on a board with the CBJ.
Okay, and where? Noon
on Friday in the Assembly Chambers.
Okay, and that's free as well.
It is free as well, and if you do plan on coming, it would be great to call the city clerk's office and let them know. They are having some food available because it's the lunch hour. It's scheduled to go from noon until 1:30.
Okay, and what's the city clerk's number to you?
I don't have it off the top of my head.
You can check
it at juno.org,
okay.
And it will have the phone number.
Okay, great. If you're just joining us, Kim Kiefer's in the studio talking about CBJ activity. She's the city manager. I'm Joan Partis. This is Juno Afternoon. So I want to talk to you about some things that are that I'm hearing around town as far as what's going on with our city. And I hear that the city wants to strengthen rules on alcohol in public facilities, such as the ice rink. And I was wondering if that is indeed true, and if so, what is the problem and what is the solution?
The rules at Treadwell Ice Arena right now are no alcohol in the facility. It's been brought to our attention that alcohol is in the facility, and so we're putting specific guidelines on what happens if you are caught with alcohol in that facility. It's a rule that's been in place all along, so it's not strengthening it, but coming up with a system to how to address it when we find it.
Okay.
And what happens with people.
Are you talking about a fine? Is that?
No, we're talking about losing the ability to be able to use the facility.
Okay. All right.
So it's a warning system. You know, you're warned, and if you are found again with alcohol in the facility, then you lose use of the facility for a length of time, and then if you come back in and you do it again, it will be even a longer time.
Okay. All right.
So what we'd encourage people is no alcohol is allowed in Parks and Rec facilities. Don't bring it in the facility at all.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. And also, what's going on with the comprehensive plan? And before we talk about what's going on with the comprehensive plan, can we talk about what is the comprehensive plan?
Sure. Comprehensive plan is a vision for the community, and it's it's definitely a visionary document without any sidebars. What if we could do anything we wanted in transportation, what would we do? What would we do in economic development? How would we do non-motorized transportation and pedestrian trails and bike trails? So it looks at that of if we could do anything we wanted, what could it be? How would it go out? And with that comes policies on how to do that. And we're supposed to update the comprehensive plan every 3 to 5 years. This last year, actually it's been going on for about a year and a half, the comprehensive plan was rewritten. And so it's really difficult for people. One, it became longer. Two, it's difficult to go back and do a comparison to the existing comprehensive plan because it was rewritten and areas changed in the document and things merged together. And so it's really hard to say, was this policy was in the old one I really liked? Is it in the new one? I can't go to the same page to see if it's there. So one of the things the Assembly has asked is to look at the policies in the existing comprehensive plan, look at the new comprehensive plan policies to see what ones are in from the old one, what ones got left out from the last one, so that we can see what really changed from a policy standpoint on where we want to go. And so that's what the Committee of the Whole will be doing next Monday, is they'll be looking at those policy statements to see, are the policies in there that we want to move forward with? We all are in agreement that we need to change how we write the comprehensive plan. It's a very big document. It's really hard. We want to try and downsize it and get it into a much more succinct, easy-to-read, still can be visionary, but definitely slim down with more specifics, probably not as many policies, narrow it down to those things that probably we could accomplish in 3 to 5 years and still have that visionary for farther out.
Right. So it sounds like a brainstorming wish list backed up by feasibility.
It's backed up by a lot of policies and procedures that are already in place, directions that have already been in place, documents that have already been approved by the Assembly, master plans that have already been approved. So it does try and pull together the information from a bunch of other adopted plans, like the long-range waterfront plan is an adopted plan as part of the comprehensive plan. So it tries to take those plans as they come in and use them and reference those as we'd like to do this, this, and this on those on long-range plans.
Okay. All right. And also, what is there's buzz and there's press about the possible closure of the Front Street Clinic. So can you fill me in a little bit about that, too?
Well, I had a group of people that came and talked to me about that, and it's definitely a concern for us. One of the goals for the Assembly is to deal with our homeless population, and the wonderful thing about the Front Street Clinic is it really provides a holistic approach to people that may not get medical service anyplace else. So Front Street Clinic has nursing, it has a dentist, and it also has a counselor there. So it really does try to look at the whole person and assist them. It's my understanding that SEARCH is looking at reductions as is happening all over for a variety of different reasons. And one of their concerns is the cost of the Front Street Clinic. I know that we have a huge need for the homeless population downtown, and I don't know where else they would get that service if it wouldn't be at Front Street Clinic. They could get it at the hospital. I just don't know if they're comfortable going to more of a hospital setting, whereas the setting at Front Street Clinic is less probably intimidating for them.
Right.
Come in and have that. And because some of them have been coming in for some time, they have that relationship built up with those people.
Right. So when do you think we'll hear definitive word? Is it just like, oh, they're considering it? Or
it's my last I heard that the board was going to meet this Friday to determine how to move forward and set the budget for search for next year.
Right.
And that's when that would be considered.
Right.
But I've heard that from a variety of other people other than anybody
right.
in their office.
It seems like maybe we should have some search personnel in here to talk about that. That might be the most appropriate way to
mm-hmm.
talk about it. And then lastly, I just wanted to ask you, so Clark Greening has retired, and is the city looking for a new legislative lobbyist?
We are. We are. And in fact, tonight we've had a number of people that have come and talked to us and said we'd like to be on the list of consideration for the future lobbyists. And so I've got a plan that I'll be bringing to the assembly tonight that looks at the people that have said we're interested in it, looks at other people that have lobbying experience for municipal governments, and then we'll walk through that process as long as the assembly's on board. We'll follow through on that with the hopes of trying to have somebody on board with us by the second week in September.
Oh, wow, that's soon.
Yes.
Soon. So it doesn't look like you're doing a search. It looks like you have a handful of candidates, local candidates.
A handful of candidates.
Okay.
Yes.
Great. Okay. I heard the distinction. Well, Kim, is there anything else that you'd like to add?
I don't think so. Oh, you know, I would. You talked about it at the very beginning. Remember, school starts tomorrow. With that, the chief of police is going out, and he will be riding his bike. We've had a number of bike accidents where vehicles have run into bikes this summer. In fact, we've had 5 of them, I think, at the last count. So our police chief is going out with his bike gear on, with his bike helmet. And if you spot the chief, you need to call the JPD office, and you can get all this information on juno.org and go to the police department page, and it actually has a picture of the police chief in the gear that you will be looking for him. And if you do, you can get a $10 bill if you spot the chief in the right place. And it's a collaboration with a number of different people in town, but what it is to try and draw people's attention to bikers on the street. With school starting, we've got a lot of kids that will be biking to school. It may be their first time biking to school, so we really need people to pay attention. And so the chief, along with a variety of other groups in town, are trying to raise that education.
Oh, wow. So it's spot the chief. And
spot
if you
the
do,
chief.
Call JPD, and I'm assuming he's going to have like a big police on the back of
well,
his jersey.
He actually is pretty spotted what his bike jersey looks like.
Okay. He's identifiable.
He is
you're
identifiable.
Saying. All
yes.
right. That sounds fine. But while you're looking for him, make sure that you look out for the kids, too.
Exactly. Please do.
All righty. Thanks, Kim, for joining us.
Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday, the 19th of August, 2013. It's the birthday of humorous poet Ogden Nash. It's also the birthday of Star Trek creator Gene Roddenberry and of former President Bill Clinton. And it's the birthday of Frank McCourt, born in Brooklyn, New York in 1930, the first of 7 children born to 2 Irish immigrants. He lived for a few years in New York City as his father struggled to hold on to a job, but after his younger sister died, the family decided to return to Ireland, and they settled in the town of Limerick. McCourt's father was an alcoholic and managed to spend all of his meager income at the pub. McCourt grew up wearing tattered clothing and shoes that had been resold with scraps of old tires. His family's home had neither a bathroom nor electricity. He and his siblings slept every night in bed with their parents on a flea-infested mattress. For most meals, all they had to eat was tea and bread. McCourt's mother said the tea and bread was a balanced meal because it contained a liquid and a solid. When McCourt was 10 years old, he caught typhoid fever. He had to spend a week in the hospital, and he was shocked to find that the hospital was a kind of paradise. It was the first time he could remember that he got 3 square meals a day, the first time he had slept between real bed sheets, and it was also the first time he had free access to books. He read Shakespeare and fell in love with literature. From that day forward, he would borrow books whenever he could find them, and since his house had no electricity, he would read at night on the street, standing under a street lamp. By the time he was 13, he had quit school to support the family with a job delivering telegrams. He eventually saved enough money to buy a ticket on a boat in New York City, where he supported himself as a hotel employee and a meat packer until his service in the Korean War won him a GI Bill to attend college. After that, he became a high school English teacher and taught in the New York City public schools for 18 years. For years, he tried to write about his experiences growing up in Ireland, but he kept throwing away the results. Every time he tried to write about his life, he found he was too angry to write anything worth reading. McCourt had retired from teaching, and he was spending most of his time babysitting his granddaughter. One day, he was listening to the way his granddaughter used language, and he suddenly realized that the key to writing his book would be to write it in the voice of a child. A few days later, McCourt opened up a notebook and wrote the words, "I'm in a playground on Clayson Avenue in Brooklyn with my brother Malachi. He's 2. I'm 3. We're on the seesaw." It was his earliest memory, and it became one of the first scenes in what would become his memoir, Angela's Ashes. And here's a poem by Jim Daniels called American Cheese. At department parties, I eat cheeses my parents never heard of, gooey, pale cheeses speaking garbled tongues. I have acquired a taste, yes, that's okay, I tell myself. I grew up in a house shaded by the factory's clank and clamor, a house built like a square of 64 American singles, the ones my mother made lunches with for the hungry man who disappeared into that factory and 5 hungry kids. American singles, yellow mustard, day-old Wonder Bread, not even Swiss with its mysterious holes. We were sparrows and starlings, still learning how the blue jay stole our eggs, our nest eggs. 64 singles wrapped in wax, dig your nails in to separate them. When I come home, I crave, more than any home cooking, those thin slices in the fridge. I fold one in half, drop it in my mouth. My mother can't understand, doesn't remember me being a cheese eater, plain like that. American Cheese by Jim Daniels, from his collection In Line for the Exterminator, published by Wayne State University Press, and used here by permission on The Writer's Almanac. This is Billy Collins for The Writer's Almanac, hoping you'll join us next time.
Hello, you are listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm Joan Pardis. Jeff Brown is the engineer and producer of the show. And I just want to make a little addendum to that. I have a dream event that's happening Wednesday. It is a Wednesday, but it's Wednesday, August 28th at 5 p.m. at the Douglas Library. And this program is run in association with the Black Awareness Association of Juno and sponsored by the Friends of the Juno Public Library. For more information, 586-0442, a commemoration of Dr. King's famous speech, I Have a Dream. Also, some other news. The Dyke Trail by the airport is closed for maintenance. It's going to be closed from today until hopefully Wednesday at 5 p.m. It should reopen Wednesday at 5 p.m. So if you're running or walking or taking your dog out there, it is closed to foot traffic and vehicle traffic. Okay, so our next guest is Adam Harkness. He is up in Anchorage, and he is a representative of the Better Business Bureau here in Alaska. Hi, Adam. Are you there?
Yes, I am. Good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
Oh, we are thrilled to have you. So the first Better Business Bureau was founded in 1912, and as of today, there are 113 Better Business Bureaus throughout U.S. and Canada. I understand that Alaska is part of a network with other states as well. Is that correct?
That is correct. The Alaska Better Business Bureau is actually headquartered. The main office is right there in Midtown Anchorage, but the main office is in DuPont, Washington, which is just south of Metro Seattle.
Okay. So it's Washington and Alaska, and is there another state as well that falls under its jurisdiction?
Yes. Our bureau also covers Oregon, and we have an office there just outside of Portland.
Okay. So, Adam, tell me about Better Business Bureau, what it does, and how the average consumer can benefit from it.
Sure. Well, in a nutshell, Better Business Bureau is a neutral, not-for-profit public reporting agency with the mission to advance marketplace trust. And there's basically two aspects of that. There's a consumer side and there's a business side. On the consumer side, we provide free business reviews. We have about 3.8 million business reviews on companies in Alaska, Oregon, and Western Washington. And then there's our complaint handling. If you have a problem with a business, let's say you go to a store and you buy a toaster, you get home and it doesn't work, and the business says, oh, well, too bad, we're not going to give you your money back. You can come to us, file a formal complaint, and we will act as a neutral third party to try to open up the lines of communication and get that issue resolved. And then on the business side, we offer tons of small business resources for primarily BBB accredited businesses who believe in our mission of advancing marketplace trust, and we work with them to succeed as best as they can.
Okay, when you talk about resources, what kind of small business resources?
We do a ton of research as to what's going on, trends in the marketplace, what consumers are looking for, all the kind of things that, you know, think about a small 3 or 4 person plumbing crew or contracting crew. They don't have time to do, you know, search engine optimization, and all that stuff is built into the back end and on what we can offer.
Okay, that sounds great. And then as a consumer, if I want to check out a business, if I'm thinking, you know, I'm thinking of buying X from two different companies, where can I go to actually look through the information that you have?
All of our free BBB business reviews are available online, bbb.org. You can also call in or shoot us an email, and we provide about 11,000 instances of service per day. So, I mean, consumers are turning to us regularly for advice, and it's great. We consider ourselves to be an authority on this.
Okay, and it's a free service, is that correct?
Yes, all of the services that we offer to the public are completely 100% free of charge.
Okay.
And they are made possible by the support of BBB accredited businesses.
Okay, and that's the same with the mediation. So if I feel that I've been wrongly served or, you know, feel unhappy with a purchase, I could come to you and there's a process to perhaps mediate this to a result that will make everybody happy.
Sure, we do offer mediation and arbitration services, but we find it rarely comes to that. Most of the time when a consumer files a complaint and we accept that complaint, process it, and then approach the business, most of the time we find it's just a matter of miscommunication, and the business is very eager to work with us to resolve that issue. Every once in a while it does come down to mediation, arbitration, but again, you know, that's a very rare occurrence.
Okay. So what is the info for people to check out your services here in Alaska as far as the website and a number?
Sure. BBB.org. You can go to alaska.bbb.org. That will have all of the local information that'll plug right through there. And I always recommend people check out the News Center, which is right there in the middle of the front page. A huge part of what I do is I skim the news, the web, the newspapers, anything that's out there that will potentially impact Alaskan consumers, it's my job to look for that. So that'll be front and center when you go to that website. You can also call our main line, our main Anchorage line there, which I don't have right in front of me.
Well, I'm sure it's on the website. Is that correct?
Yeah, the best bet is to always go to the website. That's the fastest and easiest way to look up all of the information that you could possibly need from Better Business Bureau.
Yeah, that sounds great. And is there anything coming down the pike that we should know about? Is any events or any changes or anything that's going on in Alaska?
Yes, ma'am. On October 19th, we have our next Secure Your ID Day, which is a free document shredding and cell phone recycling event that we do twice a year. It's a great opportunity to clean out your closet, get rid of any of those old tax documents, medical statements, anything that has personally identifiable information on it that you shouldn't just be throwing in the garbage. That puts you at a huge risk for identity theft. So we offer these free document shredding services, and the next one will be in Wasilla. We're still working on locking down the location. But, again, that's, you know, get rid of that stuff. You don't want to throw it in the garbage.
Okay. Okay. Well, Adam, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah, thanks for all you do.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Bird Note. In summer, the grasslands of southern Saskatchewan resound with birdsong. Meadowlarks and bobolinks combine their voices in a rich, ringing chorus. Through these grasslands flows the Frenchman River, twisting and looping again and again, sinuously, mile after mile, the epitome of a meandering river. The river's flow creates its own music. It was meltwater at the end of the last glaciation, some 10,000 years ago, that carved the Frenchman River into the earth. Water from melting glaciers also laid down the soil that nurtures the grasslands. Today, the southern reaches of the river lie within Grasslands National Park, Canada's premier park devoted to preserving this unique ecosystem. As the river meanders, it blends its music with that of the birds. The soundscapes featured in today's show were recorded by Gordon Hempton and provided courtesy of QuietPlanet.com. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann.
Hello, this is Juno Afternoon on KTOO News. I'm Joan Pardis. Jeff Brown's the engineer and producer of our show. And our next guest is Summer Custer from the Juno Family Birth Center. Hi, Summer.
Hola.
Hi.
Hola.
So you are teaching a Kinder Español class, is that true?
Yes. Sí, señora. It's true. I'm teaching Kinder Español, which means it's Spanish instruction for children, and it's for ages 0 through 11. We have different classes depending on the age. So, for example, I'm registering for fall semester. And fall semester starts September 11th, and it goes until the middle of December. And the two classes are, there's the class for the youngins, which is 0 through 5, babies, toddlers. It's appropriate for the little ones, and that's called gatitos, or kittens. And that's going to be on Thursdays, from 12:45 until 1:30. And then the second class is perritos, which is doggies, and that's there's two classes you can choose from. It'll be either Wednesdays from 4:30 until 5:15, or on Thursdays from 1:45 to 2:30.
Okay. So let's talk about the kittens. How do you say that in Spanish?
Gatitos.
Okay, so it's 12:45 to 1:30 on what day?
On Thursday.
On Thursdays, mm-hmm. And it's at the Family Birth Center.
Correct. In the upstairs room.
Right, and so 0 to 5, so it's probably songs and different types of fun stories and age-appropriate.
Absolutely.
For the youngins. And is there a fee to the class?
Yes, there is. Parents can choose to sign up for the full semester, which is 14 lessons, and that's $200.
Okay.
Or you can go by the month, which is $60 a month. And if parents sign up after the semester starts, then I prorate that.
Okay, great. And how many kids, families, at that age, kid families do you take?
Kid and families. That's a good question. I think I would top it off between 8 to 10.
Okay.
Next.
And then for the 5 to 11-year-olds, mm-hmm. and you were calling them doggies, and mm-hmm. what's the word for that?
Perritos.
Perritos, of course.
They're like little dogs.
Right. And so that's Wednesday, 4:30 to 5:15 at the Juno Family Birth Center, mm-hmm. or Thursday from 1:45 to 2:30.
Mm-hmm.
And is it the same fee structure?
Sí.
Okay. All right. So it's the same. So $60 a month if you want to go monthly, or $200 for the semester.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
And is there a goal, like for the 5 to 11-year-olds, or do you think mm-hmm. by the end of the first semester that they'll be able to have basic conversations or be able to identify, be able to identify certain objects in Spanish? Or?
Yes, definitely. They will know a lot of practical, useful Spanish words, things that they normally interact with. And all the teaching is done through context. So, for example, we're manipulating objects and playing with things, and then we sing them, and those things that they see in their world and play with, those are the things that I'll be introducing to them through context. So it's not just here, this is the it's not translation necessarily, it's more I speak it all in Spanish and I say, okay, this we're going to do this activity or this craft or this game, and these are the words that you need to know, but of course it's all in Spanish.
Right. Right. So, no, this sounds great. It kind of sounds like English as a second language, you know, that you just kind of immerse yourself and you get there by hand gestures and context. And then you're
on your
way.
And it's a lot of fun. Like you said, it's a lot of games and movement and total physical response activities. So they are using their bodies, and a lot of it is they respond. The way they start out is by I say the word, and they indicate that they can understand it through movement or playing with the object, and slowly we get to that point where then they are repeating the words and saying the words and using them in conversation.
Oh, that sounds great.
Yeah.
That sounds great. Have you done this class before? Have you taught this
class before? I've been teaching Kinder Español, per se, since March of this year, but I've been teaching this age group in general in private homes for the last couple of years. And then before that, for 7 years, I taught Spanish in Southern California.
Oh, wow, great. So, and is Spanish your first language?
No, my second language.
It's your second language. Yeah. Sounds great.
But I've had lots of practice.
All right. Okay, so what is the contact information if people want to know more?
Sure. It's, you can go on the website, which is kinderspanish.wordpress.com.
Okay, and if people looked up Spanish lessons, Spanish-speaking lessons in Juno on the web, do you think that they would find
Yeah, you? Spanish lessons in Juno or Spanish classes in Juno. You just Google that and it comes right up, Kinder Spanish.
And is there a phone number?
Or Kinder Español. Yeah, the number is, it's still my Southern California area code, so it's 949-547-9827.
Okay. Well, that sounds great.
Yeah.
All right. Well, so there you have it. Kinder Español at the Juno Family Birth Center for 0 to 5-year-olds, from infants to 5-year-olds. And then also two classes for 5 to 11-year-olds. And they start mid-September. So thanks so much for coming on the show.
Well, thank you. And have a great afternoon.
Thank you. Thank you.
you're listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm Joan Pardis, and Jeff Brown is the engineer and producer of the show. In the studio today, right now, is Alaska's fiddling poet, Ken Waldman. Ken came to his name in 1995. The programming committee of the Southeast Alaska State Fair asked participating musicians to send a five-word or less description of their acts to help with publicity. So Ken described himself as Alaska's fiddling poet. The moniker stuck, even though he has kind of blown the doors off that moniker because he travels all over the country. He's a former college professor with an MFA in creative writing. He's been a visiting writer at over 80 colleges. He's done residencies. He's got 9 CDs, including 2 CDs for children. He's got several books out. He's a poet, and he's a musician, and he's here right now. So hi, Ken.
Hey, Joan, how are you?
I'm great. Did I leave anything out?
No, you did really good with that. You did better than most, I would say, so thanks.
Well, that's because you have a great new website.
It is improved, actually. Yeah, kenwaldman.com is improved. So, yeah.
So I went there and I did a little research, and it was really, really interesting that you have taken a lot of different talents and pursued them all, and you're on the road doing it, which is great.
Yeah, I mean, I started doing this, I mean, really 18 years ago, living in Juneau, and of course you either work in Juneau or you take a boat or a plane to go elsewhere, and that had its challenges. So from Juneau in 1998, I moved to Anchorage, and then in 2001 I started driving around the country, and I'm still driving around the country an awful lot.
That's
and
true.
Flying some too.
And I have your schedule here, and this schedule is your music, is this correct?
This is music and poetry. It's a mix of different things. So, for instance, a couple weeks back, I'm here because I was just on Whidbey Island doing something for an organization. The acronym is NILA. It's Northwest Institute of Literary Arts, and they have a graduate school writing program, and I was there as a visiting speaker, who, because I play the fiddle, I'm a value-added writer with that. So I was there, and then this is close. I had some time off, so I feel like I'm literally visiting all old haunts here in Juneau, and then I'm going to be up in Anchorage for a few days later this week and early next week.
That sounds great. You're all over the country. You're in New York, you're in Indiana, you're in Santa Fe, you're in Seattle, so it's not just Northwest or Northeast or anything. And it's a hybrid. So you're doing the college circuit as becoming a speaker, and then you're doing the music circuit.
Yeah, and I do a lot of stuff with in elementary schools, middle schools, high schools. The job I'm going to be doing in Santa Fe, folks who know Santa Fe, I'm going to be playing at the Lensic Theater, which is kind of a big deal for, I've been trying to do something there for a while, but it's a large theater, and I'm going to be doing something for about 600 or 700 kindergartners and first graders, and I've learned to do that kind of work. You know, somebody like Jeff, who has done lots of different things, I mean, living in Alaska, you learn you can do anything, and I've learned to do that kind of work.
Well, entertaining 600 or 700 kindergarten or first graders, that is something. That's a huge number.
Well, I'm going to have an accompanist or two joining me, but still, I have my tricks with it, you know, so that's
part of what I do.
You
know, for us, for the Junoites, that's like a really huge number of very, very young children.
That's the thing, too, is that, you know, Juno, you have population, then you go down south, or the state of Alaska, there's the 700,000 plus people, and you go to, say, Tucson, Arizona, and there's more people than that in the metro area there, and that's Tucson. That doesn't include Phoenix or Southern California or
I know.
So on.
Like
yeah.
many Junoites, I didn't come from here.
Yeah,
I live
yeah,
here.
Yeah.
So let me ask, I have a question, and if I'm going the wrong direction, you could just say, I don't really want to
there
talk about
no
that. There's more things.
I'm just saying
that to put together a life like this of becoming a traveling, you know, speaker for the writing circuit and musician and so on and so forth, it takes a lot of effort. I think you actually do some workshops about how you do it.
Exactly. And in fact, the last time I believe that I was on this show, it was with Jeff when this memoir of mine called Are You Famous had just come out, and that book talks about me doing this work and how I came to do this work. And it's people who know me just go, he sure works hard. And as I keep doing it, it doesn't get easier, but I think as we all get more experienced and smarter, we learn how to put these things together. That, for instance, when I first started, I wouldn't have thought of doing kids shows. But when you start seeing that that's an opportunity, and I was a college professor in Nome, teaching writing, I traveled to villages. And when I was traveling to villages, I would go into the schools and I learned to work with the elementary and middle schoolers. And what worked in rural Alaska, I found versions of that will be working in Santa Fe at the Lensic, and I've been doing that for years and years. But I when I first started touring, I wasn't thinking of doing the kids' things. I go, oh, I have these poems. I can play Appalachian fiddle tunes, Appalachian-style fiddle tunes, and I started making up fiddle tunes. But that wasn't enough, and I found solo, I better get people to join me. I better start learning to work with kids. Now I'm doing a lot of variety shows, too, and I'm as somebody has been saying, Ken Waldman, he's an impresario now, but I'm learning to do what can both sell but also can be entertaining and educational.
Okay. And then there's also this workshop, so you want to go places with your art.
Yeah.
Are you still doing that, too?
I just did one of them in, where was I just at? In Sleepy Hollow, New York last month at the Hudson Valley Writers Center, where I did one of those. And it's for not just writers, but for artists of all disciplines. And you're using the writing as kind of foundation with it. But what it is just figuring out ways to better use resources. Just as I've learned to do, so can everybody out there, whether it's musicians, if they want to, how would you get gigs in Seattle from here or Anchorage or to even play in Sitka or Haines? What are the steps to do or how to make a CD that might get radio airplay on K2 or around the state or down south? And there's steps to that.
Right. And it's interesting because now that now that we're all connected through the internet, you know, what before was maybe traditionally handled by an agent or a booking agent or a tour manager or so on and so forth, you could certainly do on your own. If you have, anyone could do it. It's just a skill set.
Yes, it's a skill set if you want to work hard and you have a certain, God, you can overuse the word entrepreneurial, but if you have certain self-starter skills. I mean, what I think of myself sometimes is I'm a full-time job hunter. Anybody finding a job, how do you go about finding a job? But you're finding a job, here's my gig in Juneau. Here it is on Whidbey Island. Here I am going to be in Rome, New York this fall. How did that happen? And there's stories about that, and they're always different, but there's some things that are similar to all these jobs.
Right, right. And some artists don't really have the interest or the inclination to do what you're doing. So it's interesting. You're using your right brain and your left brain.
Yeah,
and
one of the terms I just say, it's all cumulative, that everything I've learned up to this point I'm putting into practice. And I guess I'm a sucker for it because I keep enjoying it, even though it doesn't get easier, but in a way it does get easier because I keep meeting people and I'm constantly surprised with who I meet and how I meet them, and my job in a sense is when I've come to Juneau the last few years, I go, well, I'm not going to be able to just come to Juneau for the festival, which is when I usually try to come through, but when I am here, it's playing, but it's also networking and working. I'll usually meet a person or two where it's like, oh, would you like to come to our school or come to our community? And then I go, yeah, I'd like to. How can we make that happen? And that starts a conversation, which is a lot easier than a cold call and starting from scratch. And that's how I do this everywhere. And I keep meeting people as we get older. We know a lot of people.
It's true. It's true. And I guess you like your life on the road. I mean,
I have that peculiarity that I do. I kind of have a rambling gene in me, I think. And I wasn't like that growing up. I grew up on the East Coast outside Philadelphia. We didn't go anywhere. But when I went to college, one of my jokes was I went as far away as I could imagine, which was about a 6-7 hour drive to North Carolina. And that was just for starters, because when I graduated, a pal said, I'm getting a friend from home and getting in a van and driving to California and back. And I thought, that sounds like fun. And that was one thing that kind of started me thinking there's bigger things than just Philadelphia and even just East Coast. And I always think I have a poem about that. I think it's one in a million that got me from Philadelphia to Durham, North Carolina, to eventually to Seattle, and then Fairbanks, Juneau, Sitka, Nome, and so on. And I've been to a lot of the villages. I've been to all over the state. And now I get to some really interesting places just around the country. And I'll say one more thing, because I know you should be asking me questions with it. But people say, like, what's your favorite place? And I go, with the work I do, every place becomes a favorite place because I'm meeting just, I think, some of the most wonderful people in all the communities I go to. There's great people everywhere who are involved with arts and education, and I get to be part of that everywhere, which I love.
That sounds great. So if you're just joining us, Ken Wolman's here. He's known as Alaska's Fiddlin' Poet, but he's gone national. And Ken, we only have about like a minute or two, so do you want to read a poem or you want to play something?
Because we're kind of down on time. Yeah, well, maybe I'll, because I didn't make, I was going to try to get to the festival this year, and I didn't get here, and I didn't get here last year, so maybe I should read my poem in memory of Buddy Tabor.
Would that be something called Songwriter
in Memory of Buddy Tabor. Best to listen closely, people. Underneath the grumbling, darn stupid pain, darn government, darn stupid music business, years spent making near-perfect turns of guitar, lyric, voice. At least a man has that. Best to listen closely, out of respect. Yes, people, respect. It's in every true song.
That's great.
And that was in memory of Buddy, who... You know, somebody that whenever I would come through, and I'm staying with my friends Jim and Martha Stay, who a lot of people listening would well know, that I'd be here for whether a day or two or for a week. At some time, Buddy would come in and we would have, you know, we'd have kind of a conversation that always touched on those kind of things. So that's my poem. And for folks out there, couldn't see it, it's an acrostic, so it spells Buddy's name going down on it. So.
All right. All right. Well, Ken, thank you so much for stopping
thank
in
you,
on your time in Juneau.
And Jeff, too. Jeff was who I visited, said, what are you doing on Monday? So I'm here.
That's that Jeff.
Yeah.
Who's doing great. He's the producer and engineer of the show. So, Ken, thanks so much. We're going to go for a quick break, and we'll come back and do the weather and wrap up the show. Thanks.
Thanks. Yeah.
You're listening to KTOO News. This is Juneau Afternoon. I'm Joan Partis. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show. The weather today is mostly cloudy. Isolated showers, highs around 59, southeast winds 10 miles per hour. Tonight, showers likely, lows around 50. Tuesday, numerous showers, highs around 60, southeast wind 10 miles per hour, shifting to the southwest in the afternoon. Tuesday night showers, Wednesday night rain. Thursday through Friday, rain likely, and Saturday, rain likely. It's not raining right now. You've been listening to Juneau Afternoon. Tomorrow is another great show. So they'll be talking about the retro science sci-fi movie at the Planetarium. Amber Smith will be here with the news about Wednesday's Healthy Body, Healthy Brain presentation. Eddie Reyes will be here to talk about Saturday's Uniting the Latin Community event at Sandy Beach. And Superintendent Glenn Gilbert will be here to highlight the first day of school, which is tomorrow. Have a great day. Thanks for listening.
This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. KTOO also broadcasts on these translators. In the Valley and Ok Bay area, tune to K276AF 103.1. In Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K269AO at 101.7. Gustavus listens on K201AM 88.1. K220BT serves Hoonah at 91.9. In Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait, hear KTOO on K210AS 89.9. In Juneau, you can also receive KTOO on GCI Cable Juneau on digital channel 871.